I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Hunting Seasons, the podcast that dares to binge watch, deep dive, and break down a season of television. Each and every episode, I'm Broderick Gordis.
I'm Damask Leary.
And today we'll be discussing Paper Girls Season 1. Damask Leary, how you doing over there in Perth?
Pretty good. I just got a bunch of new minis that I've been gluing together. As I said to you as soon as we started this call, you didn't seem that interested, but maybe someone who's a listener will.
Explain what you're planning to do with them again. Just tell the listeners what your project here is.
Yeah, I don't play like Warcraft or anything, but I...
Warhammer?
I'm so sorry. That's a really good point. Yeah, I don't play either of those things, one of which is real.
Warcraft is a video game. That's fine.
Thank you. I just want to make a giant army of like evil dudes and a giant army of noble dudes and ladies. I should include that, sorry. And whoever. And I just want a giant scene of like fantasy creatures, beings fighting one another. So I'm going to build both of that. And then when I'm finished with that, then I'm going to do a sci-fi battle as well. Ultimate plan.
And then you plan to do what with these?
Oh, it's a great question.
Donate them to a museum or something?
I don't have anywhere to put them at all. They're currently filling up my spare room. But, you know, I'll figure that out when I get there.
Great. Yeah. Mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm. You should travel into the future to see your future self and see if you actually did that or not. That'd be
exactly interesting. I know me. I didn't, but it's nice to dream.
All right. Let's get to our spoiler-free review of Paper Girls Season 1.
Let me clue you in.
Season in review.
Paper Girls is an American science fiction drama television series created by Stephanie Folsom, best known as screenwriter of Toy Story 4 and for contributing to the story of Thor Ragnarok and The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power. The show is based on the 2015 to 2019 comic book series of the same name written by Brian K. Vaughan, aka Runaways and Why the Last Man Writer, and illustrated by Cliff Chiang, and follows four young girls who, while out delivering papers during the early hours of November 1st, 1988, become unwittingly caught in a conflict between warring factions of time travelers. The series premiered on Amazon Prime Video on July 29th, 2022, and stars a quartet of talented young women, including Riley Lai Nalette, Cameron Jones, Sophia Rosinski, and Fina Strazar, alongside Adina Porter, Ali Wong, Nate Cordy, Sakai Abeni, and the one and only Jason Mantzoukas. Paper Girls Season 1 consists of 8 episodes, each coming in at around 44 minutes and took us approximately 5 hours and 55 minutes to watch. In September of 2022, the series was cancelled after just one season. So, Damask Leary, before we get to our spoiler-free review, I just wanted to ask, what's your familiarity with Paper Girls? Did you read the comic books? And, of course, to Brian K. Vaughan, the writer of said comic book.
Zero. Across the board, it's a big, fat zero. I had no idea about what Paper Girls was. Was The Runaways that... Did they turn that into a really bad TV show?
I mean, ask if it was a Brian K. Vaughan show, chances are yes is the answer to that question.
And did it have James Masters or is that another one?
James Masters. I don't know if I got that far into it to find out. He might have, but yes, he was. James Masters was in it.
Yeah, I think I watched one episode and I was like, this is truly terrible.
I had to three seasons, actually. That surprises me. Yeah, I got to the season
and
two.
And this was cancelled after one. The world is not right, people. The world is not right. Yeah, no, I have... we watched Why Last Man.
We did
so
watch
I've watched his stuff. I haven't read any of his stuff.
You may have also seen some other stuff that he's done as well, because I think he was showrunner on The Dome, which got a couple of seasons as well. And
didn't watch that.
From memory, he might have written a couple of episodes of Lost, including The Constant, which is considered one of the best ones. I'm 95% sure that's correct. I didn't get that wrong.
Okay.
I'm a fan of Brian K. Vaughan. I've read his Runaways run. He created The Runaways, basically, and the first three graphic novels worth of The Runaways. Loved that. The show I lasted two episodes and got out of, which is a real tragedy because my brother Liam and I have always said that would make a great TV show, and apparently we were wrong. Then I read Why the Last Man, one of my favorite comic book series of all time. Loved that. Then they turned that into a TV show. It lasted one season, and we were also wrong. That wasn't a great TV show either. It wasn't terrible.
I think it had potential.
But Brian K. Vaughan just does not seem to have any luck when it comes from turning his excellent comic book series into television series, unfortunately. With that in mind, I want to start by reading an email from a listener of the show, Shari, who actually asked us and suggested that we do review Paper Girls because she enjoyed it and also because it had been cancelled after one season, I think, and wanted people talking about it. It's fair to say this show sort of flew under the radar for a lot of people. Amazon didn't quite pump the marketing budget into this as they did Rings of Power. Anyway, Shari's email, when I replied to her email asking her, you know, what she thought of the show, what she'd like us to talk about, or what sort of drew her to it, this was her response. The main reason I loved the show was the girls' relationships. The young cast was unknown to me, but they were all very good. I found the time travel aspect most interesting in the way it introduced the girls to spoiler. We'll talk about that when we get to spoilers. But the mechanics of it were sometimes confusing, so I just tried not to overthink it too much. Effects weren't great either, and the pink could be too much, especially in the last episode, which I also thought was the weakest, unfortunately. Too many things done to get them where they needed to be to continue the story. And the spoiler, also something we're talking about in spoilers, but again, it wasn't what drew me to the show in the first place. Give me those girl friendship dynamics, end quote.
With that in my language.
Absolutely. It was one of the reasons I thought we should come back around to this, and I found that you already watched the show, because we do love those female friendships on Hunting Seasons. So with that in mind, and with Shari's email in mind, Damask, thank you for that, Shari. Appreciate that. If anyone else would like to give us their thoughts on TV shows we're reviewing, please email us at contact@huntingseasonspodcast.com. Damask, can you please give us your spoiler-free review of Paper Girls Season 1.
I can. All right. So I started watching this series without any context at all. While listening to an episode of How Did This Get Made, Jason Manzoukas said people should watch it. So I did. I didn't even know he was in it.
Yeah. suddenly makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. I like Miss Manzoukas, and the title sounded cool. I wondered if it was like Bomb Girls, the absolutely solid but sadly too soon cancelled Canadian show about women entering the workforce during World War II. Turns out it's nothing like Bomb Girls other than being cancelled too soon. R.I.P. If you watch the trailer, you'll get a general vibe for what the show is. It's a sci-fi about a group of teen girls trying to figure out time travel. Except it's actually not that at all. I mean, it is, but that's not the best or most interesting part of Paper Girls. Within the fun premise is a really solid story of preteen girls figuring out themselves, their families, what being an adult could look like, and all of the compromises you have to figure out along the way. The main four actors are all very good, and each character is distinctive. The writing feels genuine to the silliness and self-righteous dramatics of 12-year-olds. While experiencing pretty dire circumstances, the show is grounded by a natural sense of humour that feels true to character. As an adult, you can't help but have constant flashes of your own 12-year-old self appearing in your lounge room and being shocked at how lame you are now. Although I think 12-year-old me would be pretty chuffed at how often I eat Macca's for dinner.
Do you reckon they'd like your Nietzsche collection as well?
It's hard to say because they might be like, oh, wow, that's really cool. Or they might be like, what are you doing with our life? I'm not really sure. yes and no, I think. This story clearly has much further to go, but as we know, it was cancelled. There's plenty of plot to explore. But what I'm most heartbroken about is that these characters had taken such great steps towards growth. I would have loved a 3 to 5 season run. The young women they could have become, oh, and the friendship they could have cultivated. Good Lord, it's so sad. Such a shame that Amazon couldn't have put aside a little bit of coin, maybe out of the $500 million budget they gave to Rings of Power. You know, what do they say about putting all your eggs in one franchise? Oh, yeah, don't do it. I mean, I'll be honest, I've been enjoying Rings of Power, but, like, that's so much money on one show. And you're cancelling something like Paper Girls with so much potential after one season and it being available to the public for, what, a month and a half? It's gone? That's it? Goodbye? Oh, such little foresight. Anyway, I guess I'll just have to go buy the comics instead. I have noticed that you can buy them in one beautiful collection now, so I recommend everyone to go out and buy that. I'm certainly going to do that. And yes, it has been cancelled after one season, but please watch that one season. I think it's really good and it had such wonderful potential. And I think the people who made it should get some props for that by putting your eyeballs on it. RIP Paper Girls, you had only just begun.
Very nice. My review is very similar to yours and even probably more similar to Shari's, really. I agree with a lot of what she
had to say. Yeah, everything Shari was saying, I was like, yep.
Makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
The strength of the show is undoubtedly the personal stories of these girls, mm-hmm. their relationships to each other and to themselves, the character work, the interpersonal and intrapersonal relationships, yeah, are definitely the strongest part. And that's helped by great writing, great stories, honestly. I think the angles they take on these four girls are really, really interesting, all of them in their own different way. Maybe some I was a little bit more invested than others, but that's natural for any show. You're not going to be as equally invested in all of them the same way.
Maybe season 2 would have taken us into the other characters, et cetera, et cetera. Who knows?
Perhaps. And there was also great performances, I think, from these actresses as well, which I really liked. And they are 12 years old, and they don't necessarily convincingly look like 12-year-olds, but they...
I think they do for American television.
For American television, they're probably more... Yeah, listen, they're under 20 or even under 30, which is, you know, in the ballpark.
Considering the
TV
we watched when we were growing up, that's... That first episode of Dawson's Creek when they're playing 15-year-olds, hilarious.
How old is 11 meant to be in the most recent season of Stranger Things?
Apparently, she's only meant to be like 13 or something ridiculous.
If that. Yeah. Anyway, and I think the concept of this show is generally pretty cool as well. Time travel has a lot of potential, especially in telling stories about growing up or who we were as teenagers versus who we may become as adults. The general setting and like idea, the premise, the setup borrows a lot from Terminator in more than a few ways, which there's nothing wrong with that either. Sadly, the bit that lets the show down, and Shari in particular did allude to this, is that the bigger, broader story and the execution of it doesn't quite come together the same way that the core, the emotional core of the show does. Firstly, Amazon, throw some coin at season 2, but throw a little more coin at season 1 so the visuals are a little bit better because it's a little bit clunky. The score I didn't think was particularly great either. It was kind of... When I noticed it was because it was grating on me. It kind of was just seemed to be filling dead air. It didn't really elevate the show in any way. On a writing level, not in the dialogue necessarily, but there is an awkwardness in the mechanics of the world this show takes place in. It can oftentimes be a bit silly. It can oftentimes be very convenient. and ultimately, the vibe of it, again, when it wasn't the interpersonal stories, kind of reminded me of like a teen sci-fi series from like the late 90s, early 2000s. Like the show
Spellbinder?
I was thinking more like Animorphs.
Okay, because I fucking love Spellbinder.
And like, I loved Animorphs. But this is going for a more mature audience than that. Even though it is about 12-year-olds, there are adult themes a lot of the time through it, I think.
Yes, language. They use the
language in particular. And so it was weird to see, like, my Animorph, sort of, swearing and stuff. It's like, I don't know who your audience is anymore. Maybe it was trying to, like, get me on nostalgia. As someone who was born in 88, was I meant to feel like this was from my childhood? I'm not sure.
I don't think so. I think they just assume kids are saying the F word a lot more than they
Maybe they are. You know, in fact, they probably almost definitely are. At least more than we ever saw on TV. Maybe it's just more realistic. The bottom line is I'm invested in these characters and I definitely would have liked to have seen more. I would have liked to have seen where these stories went. But I also didn't really love the experience of watching the show around those stories. And so I'm less than confident with how they may have handled even where, like, the season ended and where they were going. I wasn't so like, oh, I'm so sad I missed out on that. I was a little bit like, were they going to do that justice or not? I'm not 100% sure.
Mm.
But since the show isn't coming back, I guess the only option is to read the comics, which may really be the best way to experience this story. I think a lot of the things I'm talking about, which didn't feel like they worked on this TV show, probably worked great inside a comic book, where you're not having to worry about special effects and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's you just draw what you want, have a great artist doing the doing the artwork. And
play your own score on Spotify.
Yeah, sure. Exactly right. So I do wonder, well, if anything, it's like, well, I'm sad the show's not coming back. At least it's great to know the story's out there and you can still access it. And I'm more than ever, and I've always been, like I said, I'm a Brian K. Vaughan fan. It's weird that I haven't read this already, but I'm almost definitely going to now. Final score. Damask, how would you score this season one and only season of Paper Girls out of 5 stars?
I'm going to give it 3.5. I really enjoyed it.
I'm also going to give it a 3.5. And it kind of splits the middle of where I think this show is. It is excellent, almost masterful at times with some of its, the interpersonal relationships with the core cast and their stories. It is decent, sometimes inferior when it comes to the extra stuff around it, which takes up the bulk, the mechanics of the storyline. So you split it down the middle and you end up with a 3.5 in my ranking system.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Before we jump into spoilers, we'd like to ask everyone who enjoys the show to please review us on Apple Podcasts and or Spotify. Nothing helps the show to grow more than by throwing 5 stars or a glowing review our way.
And to sweeten the deal, if we reach 25 written reviews, we will finally review Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 1 already.
We'd also love you to share Hunting Seasons with anyone in your life that obsessively wants to talk to you about television. They'll thank you for it.
Next episode, we'll be back with our review of The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power Season 1. I gotta tell you,
You have to say it like The Rings of Power, just with the name.
The Rings of Power.
Power.
Have you heard of him, lad? Have you heard of Sauron?
Sauron. Maybe we should do the entire podcast in accents. I really would love that.
Can we do like the Irish Harfoots?
What are they called? Harfoots.
Harfoots. Harfoots.
Harfoots.
Yeah. Harfoots.
Harfoots. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Done.
Proto hobbits.
I just keep looking at their little like walnuts and acorns in their hair, and I love it. Anyway.
If you'd like to contribute to our discussion of The Rings of Power, or if you have any thoughts on Paper Girls, you can write to us or send us an audio recording that we may include on a future episode to contact at huntingseasonspodcast.com or find us on Twitter at huntingscast. But right now, let's talk spoilers for Paper Girls Season 1.
Deep dive.
It's cool to know other people think about this stuff too.
So I should explain what madness was going on there in the ad break. That power thing is a direct reference to the patron saint of TV podcasting herself, Joanna Robinson, mm-hmm. who was doing a podcast with The Ringer with another lady, Mallory... I forgot her last name. Anyway, Joanna and Mallory have been
that
doing...
That was clear. You didn't have to say that you forgot it.
Anyway, there was a podcast I was listening to alongside watching Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, which was great and got me... I was up to date. I was not surprised by the twist in that show, we'll put it that way, because they were on top of it pretty early. Anyway, we're talking about Paper Girls Season 1.
Yes.
I do want to talk just quickly about, to get it out of the way, some of my negative things.
Yeah.
Starting with, we are losing it. Starting with sort of my thoughts on the convenience and the clunkiness. And probably the best example of that for me was, I can't remember which episode it was the start of. I think it was episode 5, maybe, when they ended up in 1999, right? So they've come back from 2019 and now they're in 1999. There was that like really awkward robot fight, which... Mm-hmm. Then there was a bit where they like got away from the robot when it was trying to track them down because a rat like ran by, which was able to distract them for long enough.
That robot's programming doesn't seem very efficient.
Then when that robot got dealt with because the other robot blew up that had older Eren in it, then the soldiers arrived and they're like looking for people. But they didn't go into the trailers the girls' little heads were poking out over the glass of.
Yeah.
Like, how shit are these fucking soldiers? Then Jason Manzoukas showed up. And I got to be honest with you, I did not like his performance in this show one bit. I did not like it. And I realize that I don't always like Jason Manzoukas because I didn't love him as Derek in... The Good Place. I really like How This Get Made. I really liked him actually in Invincible, a show that frustrated me a little bit.
I thought you didn't like him in Invincible.
I think he was fine in Invincible. I didn't think I had any problems with him in Invincible.
Didn't like his voice in Invincible.
Oh, did I not like his voice? Maybe I don't like Jason Manzoukas as an actor. Maybe I just like him when he does like bit parts on Parks and Rec and stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay. So in response to this, if I may.
You're wrong.
So I did like him in Invincible. I really enjoyed him as Derek. I found him very humorous. Sure. I also did not like his character in this show.
Sure.
It was hokey. It was didn't gel with the people that he came from. And maybe there's a great explanation as to why that is that we might get in season 3 that will never exist. I don't know. But it was too much of a thing that he was doing. You know, he was doing his Jason Manzoukas thing, which I generally really enjoy.
Sure.
In this place and time, didn't work for me either. So I agree with you.
It felt particularly manufactured, and even the way he was like, he was performing his lines were very like manicured and like it was like he was reading it off a page. And again, that might be a character choice because this guy is meant to be eccentric and like he's wearing shorts and these band t-shirts and stuff like that, and he's got Jason Manzoukas' grody beard, but it just didn't work as a character. It just pulled me out, made me go, this feels.
Yeah,
wrong.
I mean, it's a particular moment, I think, just after, post the robot battle, where he's like, fuck, I'm standing in the guy or whatever, like he steps in the goo. And I was like, clearly Jason Manzoukas is being typecast to do his Jason Manzoukas thing, which can work, but here for me it is not working.
I agree. It did not work for me either. Also, the walkie-talkie thing is dumb. Like, the idea that the walkie-talkies somehow connect back to themselves in different time Like, was maybe it was only because the like the timey-wimey thing was happening at the same time, but like the idea that somehow signals that the idea that the signals of these walkie-talkies could like connect with their pair across time. Although now that I think about it, maybe it was only because the timey-wimey thing was happening and stuff was going
through. I think it was timey-wimey specific to the girls, because the woman who was part of that rebellion crew or whatever was surprised that it was happening as well.
Sure. Yeah, didn't
but it did make me laugh that woman was like, oh yeah, we use walkie talkies because they can't like trace or track like analog signals. I'm like, with all of their technology, they haven't figured that out. I mean, okay, sure, all right, but I was like, right, that's very convenient.
That's mostly the bad stuff out of the way. It's not the concept. It's just kind of a bit naff the way it was executed on screen. I think it might have worked really well in a comic book, but it just didn't work for me.
And it's that stuff that makes me go, if I'm like a teenager watching it, I wouldn't care. Like that stuff wouldn't bother me. As an adult, it does though. Because you know, Animorphs was fucking shit, and yet we watched the hell out of that. Like it was that kind of that part of the world building didn't really work for me. When we get so little of it, I also hated the design of it. The design was real hokey, looked super cheap, looked like, you know, an Australian television production from the early 2000s, if not the 90s.
All those Canadian shows you're talking about, and like, yeah.
Or the times that very often Australia and Canada would make a kids' TV show together.
Like The Saddle Club. I don't know why, but they
Genie
did.
Genie Down Under, all that stuff.
Was that with Canada?
Yeah.
I thought it must be in the UK because Penny was British. Oh, there you go.
No, you're right. I remembered incorrectly that she was Canadian.
Part of the Commonwealth, anyway. Two Commonwealth nations had to get together and make a TV show.
Yeah, there were a bunch of them, though. We were just like teamed up with Canada. I don't know what was going on.
We have
but
a similar sense of humour. We're like the colonies of the British colonies. We're like the two standouts, I think.
So they get paired together. New Zealand and Canada have more in common, just in terms of like being good-natured people. But anyway, does that not vibe with you?
Yeah, no, I'm fine with that.
I feel like Australians are more the C word, that way because New Zealanders are our like lovely cousins.
I mean, there's a lot about New Zealand I would like Australia to copy and implement, and we should all just move there. There's not enough.
And I don't think they would say the same about us.
Maybe not, and yet they come here for jobs. So you know, what are they going to do? That's where the work is. Okay,
you're coming for New Zealand now. No, right, this is a very niche for our like international listeners. They're like, what are they talking about?
Anyway, okay. Let's talk about the girls.
Let's talk about the girls. I love the girls. Yes, please.
Let's start with Erin. She's sort of set up as being like a protagonist in the first episode a little bit. She's the one who gets to meet the spoiler thing that I didn't want to mention specifically from the email from Shari. She meets the older version of herself when they get transported into 2019. Yep. What did you make of Erin and sort of her storyline this season?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit hard, particularly at the beginning, to grasp Erin because she is a very quiet girl. And then when she meets old Erin, as they call her, played by Ali Wong, she's obviously very disappointed in how her life has turned out. And this is one thing that they not only do with Erin, but they also do with Tiffany later, is this seeing your future self from the childlike black and white perspective is really interesting because you fully understand it. You're like, well, I wanted to achieve this and do this and see this and blah, 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 all this stuff. And then the adult version of Erin is like, well, that wasn't possible for me because I'm who I am. And also you're that person too. You just don't know it yet, which I quite loved. I think we lose Erin a little bit because some of the other stories, for me are more engaging.
I agree.
But I was interested to get to know her in the future.
Yes, I agree with that.
And not the future in the show. I mean, like, in future seasons.
Sure. I think the It's a strong start with Erin, and mm-hmm. I suppose I was expecting we were going to see the older version of the other girls, and we did get there eventually, but two others of them. But the arguments between young Erin and old Erin were really well handled, I think, just in that, yes, that disappointment about what we became. And I guess just the argument of, like, who you are as a person. And, like, you think you're this now, but that's not true, and this is why. Mm-hmm. This is actually who we are, and this is what we're dealing with, and this is all the things that went wrong along the way. That was very, very intriguing. And the way – and this is where I'm, like, on a writing level, some of the stuff with the underground or the old watch or whatever it's called – let me down. It was this sort of interpersonal and intrapersonal dynamics that really worked so often. And like lines like happy is a loaded word when you're my age, kid. And like the idea of what is happiness really? It's something you told, you know, you want to have a happy life when you're a kid, but when you're an adult, it's like, well, happiness is a complicated concept and not necessarily as simple as you're just happy. You have a happy life.
Yeah, as a kid, you think life's going to be like achievement unlocked, achievement unlocked, achievement unlocked. And it's like, yes, you can unlock achievements, but then it doesn't actually have the same kind of weight or feeling that you think it will when you actually get there. Yeah, I mean, I loved all of that stuff. I particularly liked, I thought Ali Wong was really good. I'd never really seen her in anything other than her stand-up specials, which I very much enjoyed. So it was nice to see her in this role. I think those two actors played off each other really, really well, which was quite lovely to see. I guess I just wanted... I mean, it's hard because I want more from young Erin, but she's not there yet. And so you can't force a character to be at that level of growth in season one. Like, it's just not fair to ask that. But we still – okay, there was one moment that I – not a moment, but the a certain way that she grew that was very interesting to me was that obviously we see that as a young child or as a young person, she – prides herself on being someone who looks after other people, which is, you know, not a bad thing, obviously. However, that becomes almost like pathological throughout her life. So the point that when she gets to be an adult, that is her personality, is that she prides herself in her ability to look after people and sacrifices much of her life to do that because it makes her feel good about herself. Then she takes it out on other people.
She's also convinced herself that if she's not around, people are struggling.
Mm-hmm.
That they're only getting by. I think one of the most revealing scenes was back in when they went to 1999, and Erin goes to a house and sees her mum hanging out with her sister.
Yeah,
and like they're great.
They're fine, yeah.
They're fine. And she's talking about, too, I can't remember if she's a Mac or someone at the time, but she's like, no, you don't understand. She's struggling, really. And it's like, nah, so you've convinced yourself that she needs as much care as you're giving and that only you can give it and that because other people aren't or can't, that they're somehow letting your mum down or whatever. That was a very, very telling moment.
Yeah,
I thought that was really
well
handled.
Like Max says to her that, you know, it's hard to see people like, if when you're not there, life continues. Like, you don't have to always be there in order for those people to continue existing. They have their own lives and their own relationships. You don't always need to feel like you have to control every situation in order for everyone to be okay. I thought that was really interesting. But it's a really good perspective, I guess, to see. Is like, obviously, she's... first gen, her mum doesn't speak English or very limited English, and so her mum is isolated and in her eyes almost helpless, and that puts like a huge amount of pressure on a child, particularly the eldest sibling, and that's manifested in really interesting ways, not only in her childhood, but we obviously see as an adult.
Just when you were talking about that whole thing, is like it's hard to see people's lives continuing on around. I don't know why my brain was like, wouldn't it be interesting if Erin just never developed object permanence and she forgot that things existed when she wasn't around? Anyway, The other thing I liked about her storyline, although I didn't love the moment that adult Erin like sacrifices herself for the girls, that then flow on effect where Erin is already struggling with this disappointed life she ends up with, is now knowing that her life has this definitive endpoint and feeling like she's just stuck with this like trajectory in her life. Though I will say it's a little weird they kept thinking that when they've watched Larry die twice. It's like, that can't happen, guys. One of these futures doesn't actually happen, which means that all futures can't happen, but, and you can change your future.
A lot of how she feels about that, though, is before she sees...
Before that, too.
Harry dies the second time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's only kind of later they realize...
I'm not saying that she was wrong to feel that way. Then this stuff starts happening. And at least at this point when... And it wasn't... The show didn't end long afterwards. I started connecting the dots like, so the future fucking isn't written. It's like, these are possible futures you're going to and they can be written and things can be changed. Mm-hmm. So that's... Which was weird because the bit with the walkie-talkie suggested that they were in a bootstrap paradox that could not be altered because they had already experienced that version of the future selves talking to themselves in the past. Which is like, now I'm confused.
Well, and they were as well, I think. Older Tiffany was kind of saying like, okay, so it's, not a bootstrap paradox. Obviously, I have no memory of these things. That's not what we're experiencing. And then when the walkie-talkie things, there's a real moment of like, wait, what is happening? Like, it clearly has something to do with specifically them. That moment, I guess those walkie-talkies perhaps, who knows? I guess I'm going to have to read the comics to figure it all out, which is fascinating because, you know, you either get one or the other quite often with time-traveling stories. So I'm fascinated to see what the reasoning is. Why then with an N? Jeez Louise, who knows what I'm saying at this point?
That's also assuming it's even the same. Like, we don't know how much has been changed from the comic book to the...
Yeah, true.
I imagine that the main story threads are all the same, but it's not necessarily true that all the mechanics are. It could be that this stuff doesn't all play out quite this way either. So, but equally, I'm interested in going back and reading the comics now. I now want to move on. Now that we're talking about knowing when you die, my personal favorite character in the show and favorite storyline, Mac.
It's so sad.
Just but early amazing. On, I thought Mac, there was something magnetic about Mac and the actress playing Mac.
Yeah.
I think she was really doing a lot with the material to both seem believable and be extremely watchable on screen. I'm guessing I don't think Terminator 2 was out yet in 1988, but I'm guessing James Cameron based a lot of John Connor on Mac because they certainly have a similar look going on.
They really do.
Down to the motorbike.
I was wondering why she looks so familiar. That's absolutely it.
John Connor. The haircut.
She looks exactly the same.
It's the same.
Are they related?
I could not get it out of my head. And it was. Yeah. And the show is already about like people from the future coming back to try and change the past while other rebels from the future try and stop them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
they're doing a Terminator thing and then you've got this John Connor looking motherfucker as well.
Oh my God.
Riding on a motorbike. Like, okay, guys, we get it. It's the Terminator.
didn't even get that.
Anyway. She was already the most interesting character and then finding out that she died at 16... was so heartbreaking. And the sequences with her and her older brother Dylan, so wonderful.
So like my favorite moments were, Mac and her brother.
Yes. Apart from setting off fireworks during the day, which is a waste of time, but go on.
I think just blowing stuff up is fun for young people. One thing that I thought was masterful about the show was, I don't know how they did it. I think it's casting, writing, direction, whatever it is. But they have this grown man and this teenage girl, and it is totally believable that they are siblings. And and the complication of then, like, because, you know, as you watch it, you don't know where it's going to go, all this stuff. But then them kind of being like, well, you're going to have to be kind of my daughter now, was interesting, and how I was fascinated by, like, what that would look like and what that would feel like. But, yeah, just in terms of the performances of those two together was really, really wonderful.
Yeah.
I absolutely loved that. Another aspect I loved was that obviously he's grown up and changed, and they had a really, really rough childhood, and he participated in some behavior that made her childhood harder. And having him kind of like acknowledge that as an adult and seeing kind of her behavior from like an adult's perspective. It's all well and good to like look back on your own past and be like, oh, well, I had it rough and I probably behaved pretty badly. But to see kind of a mirror of probably how you behaved and the things you said and the things you did, being like, oh my, yeah, it was really messed up. The things that we thought, the things that we were taught, the way that we behaved and how we treated each other was really bad, and I want to help fix that and experience that disconnect, but also have it come from such a loving place. I loved that whole thing. I thought it was amazing.
I 100% agree. I thought all of that stuff was terrific. I was happy they didn't stick too long on the whole, like, you can't be real, this can't be real, this must be a hoax thing. It was the right amount. It was the fair amount. But then started to think, well, wait a second, what if this is real? And let's just, you know, let's find out for ourselves and interrogate it properly. And then, you know, the tragedy of her life, but then the tragedy of him experiencing that life, and then how that's affected his future, then getting the opportunity to spend time with her again, and the way that he believably was still the same person but an adult version of them, but was able to sort of somehow tap into the younger version of himself, and it didn't feel creepy or weird or hokey, which I think it could, if not played right. And it was played so well. Yeah. And even one of my favorite moments, as tragic as it was like when they're out for dinner at, right before she gets taken away by KJ, and she's had an argument with his daughter, and like she gets off from the table, and you know, he goes over to find out what's going on, and she's being a bit bratty about it and whatever, and he like, I was like, oh, okay, she's going to leave and, like, be done with him. She was over him at this point. But no, he talked her around again, and she was like, okay, yeah, this is tough, but this is the way things are now. This is actually kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then she had to fucking run. And that
bit was really sad.
Where she was, like, hugging KJ on the back of the bike.
And crying.
Was heartbreaking.
It was so heartbreaking. Oh my gosh.
And it was just like one shot that they let linger, I think. Or if it was more than one shot, there were these long shots. They just sort of let linger and let the performance do all the work, and it was fucking great.
Yeah. When they're having that kind of disagreement or fight at Chili's or whatever. And she's meeting her nieces, one of which is very sweet and one of which is very much like her, and she hates her. They hate each other, because of course they would.
But like,
you know,
the rich version of her.
Yeah,
like
the rich. Yeah.
Yeah.
From
yeah.
a place of privilege, but also, you know, that kind of attitude. the I don't give a fuck, I'm rude and whatever attitude. And she says what you would say to your brother as a 12-year-old, depending on how you grow up, I suppose. And he gets up and is like, you know, yes, I'm your brother, but I'm their dad, and you can't speak to me like that. And I was like, he is a dad. Like, in that moment, I was like, yeah, he's a dad. But then he brings it round of like older, like grown up older brother vibe, which was just so lovely. And they have a wonderful hug, which they probably really haven't hugged before. Yeah, it was really beautiful, and obviously, that moment on the motorbike absolutely broke my heart. For not only the loss of a loving, safe family, but also the tragedy of her not being able to get treatment and not being able to get better as well. It was, yeah, twofold of just like, oh, Mac, no.
I just kept thinking also, like, we leave him behind and he's just gone out of the story.
Mm.
What's the fallout for him of that experience?
Emotionally, like, yeah.
Mm. Emotionally, like, I guess other people saw her, so she's real. Yeah. His wife, his kids saw her, talked to her, met her. So it's not like she wasn't real. Mm. But, like, how do you place what happened there and that she just fucking disappeared? Mm-hmm. It kind of been a mental break, but, like, it's supernatural and something, that would mess with you forever. That would fuck you up.
Mm-hmm. And that's why, like, I really need to get the comic in case, like, she's able to go back and at least have a conversation with him. Like, I need these stories ended.
In fact, yeah. I'll save that question because we cannot predict things for a future season, but I'll ask questions about where you would like these characters to go and what you would like to have seen these characters do in future seasons when we get to Hope's concerns. Anything else you want to say about Mac? I just can't get over the performance of that actress.
I adored her. I think she's amazing. Like, yeah. Like,
supremely watchable and extremely good at the role.
When the show was first starting, I was like, I know this character. Am I going to hate you? And you're meant to, like, okay, we need to talk about the growth of Mac as a whole. She starts off as a kid who's obviously very angry, has a really ignorant point of view, perspective of the world. Obviously, comes from a place of deprivation in many ways, both emotional and material, and so you understand that. But also, she's a jerk. She's very rude to people, and rude is being a polite way of saying it. She's a bigot as well.
True.
And the way she's so dismissive of Erin at the beginning, I really enjoyed watching her once she discovers that she doesn't necessarily have a future or a long-term future. She softens and becomes the caring one of the group, the one who's emotionally checked in with the others in the group, particularly Erin, going in, checking in on her, having lovely conversations with her, just being like, you know, you're strong, you're cool. Sure, I'll steal pads and a tampon for you, which is one of my favorite scenes of the show.
That was really good.
Those
scenes can be really, like, on the nose or a bit hokey too, but I thought that was really well played. And again, it comes down to well written and really well performed and well directed.
Felt very, very honest. Obviously, if you haven't been educated, you know, with appropriate sex ed for someone with a vagina, having your period is very confronting, and there are a lot of products with very little information on them as to how to use them. And so that conversation of tampons, I don't think my vagina has muscles. What if you can't get it out? Oh, your body absorbs it. No, it's like chewing gum. It'll be in your body for 7 years. Things like that was just very well done. The writing was good. The performances were amazing. So I really enjoyed that. But back to the point of Mac becomes really the heart of the group and the one who is openly caring for others and seeing when they're struggling. Because I guess she's no longer really thinking about herself in the same way and so is able to look at others with a clearer viewpoint. Yeah, I loved it.
I think you've said it well, though, the idea of, like, what am I going to hate this character?
Mm.
Because those characters can so easily just be, like, pains in the ass who you don't want to be around.
Contrarians, shut up. Yeah.
It takes an extreme amount of skill, I think, to make that person still likable and someone you want to root for and care for, to be able to be convincingly contrarian and bratty and abusive and all those things that she can be. But also, there's something there that makes you realize that she's vulnerable and a person underneath it all.
There was one moment that on the page it looks good, but the performance really heightened it for me. And it's very early on. I think it's episode 2. They're in the future. It's after the fact that Mac has shot Erin. And they're just standing out the front, I think, of the, like, IT store or whatever. And Mac's trying to apologize to her about shooting her. And just the way that she is doing it and her cadence is just like, look, I know that you know it's not my fault. Like, I already know that you know that. Like, it was just like, it was really good. It was, yeah, props to that actress. Amazing.
Very quickly, just because you already brought up the tampon bit, I was interested. I was a little perplexed. And not to say these, obviously these things can be in the story. But when all of a sudden, with all the stuff that's going on at Larry's farm, when Erin suddenly had her period, like, I understand they can just come out. It can happen when you least expect it. I was like, this is a choice to have this happen right now. Why is this happening now? And then for it really resolved with just the next scene. It's like, where is this going?
Yeah, I think it's, oh, you just in terms of the placement of it.
Just like, yeah, just when it happened. Like,
oh, okay.
As in, and from a story structure point of view, it's like, that's the thing. In reality, it could fucking happen any moment. It doesn't really matter when it is. But it is still a choice when you choose to put it in the screenplay. And so it's like, why is this happening? Why is this happening now? This is a weird time for this to happen. Where is this going?
It's just kind of like, as a woman, as a person with a vagina, I'm like, sure. But, like, it makes perfect sense that it happens at the most inconvenient, weird, random time. And also makes perfect sense if you're doing a coming-of-age story about people with vaginas, you should always have a period moment.
Sure.
Because that's what happens when you really don't want it to when you're, like, 12.
When you're hiding in a cupboard from your future sister who can't see you because it would destroy the space-time continuum. That's
Tale
when your period
is coming
right. Okay, it makes sense now. Well, we mentioned KJ. No, we didn't mention KJ yet, but we sort of did. Let's talk about KJ.
Okay, let's do it.
I really like KJ as a character. I felt early on they were struggling a little bit to figure out what to do with her. They sort of have this, like, she has a violent streak. She kills the guy with the hockey stick, and the appropriately everybody freaking out about it and her trying to, like, digest this thing that she's done was good, and then it kind of got dropped. And I was surprised that it sort of went away. It came back later when she punched Mac in the nose when she was walking away from her.
I'm glad it went away. Like, I don't want her wallowing about that for too long because there's so much happening. You don't really have time to wallow about that one guy that you killed when you've been thrust into the future. You know what I mean?
He just didn't need to die. Like, he didn't need to be dead. The choice for her to kill this guy is a character one. And so it was a little bit weird for me that it got sort of, it felt like a big deal real early on and then it just stopped being a big deal for a while. And again, this is the problem with it only getting season one. It's like, we don't get to see where they were going with this. Does KJ become a fucking cold-blooded murderer who's like the killing machine? She's the Terminator of this Terminator story? Yeah. Maybe.
I think it's like speaking to, and I'm sure would eventually explore, when you're like so repressed because of obviously hers is like a familial pressure to repress the true self, that when you do that every now and then, bam, whoopsie-daisy, every single emotion I've ever felt is being expelled in a really inappropriate way, which is an interesting thing to explore, and one would hope that they would explore that deeper in the future. But yeah, if she's being confronted either physically or emotionally, she can lash out physically. We see that obviously when she's dealing with the situation of seeing her future self and Max getting on her nerves, and bam, clocks her right in the nose. It was a good punch. It was a very good punch. But one of my notes for KJ was just that, well, that's one way to figure out that you're gay.
Yeah.
What would that do to you mentally? That would be so confronting.
How did you feel about that, like, sort of preview snapshot into yourself to find out, oh, wait. The thing is, too, it's like, I'm trying to imagine you in your shoes, if this happened to you, a young version of yourself, seeing yourself now, whatever. But it's a whole different thing when you go back
until
80. Well, imagine you're from 88. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, very different time.
Yeah, I would have been horrified. I think, like, obviously I came from a, you know, conservative Christian household. You know, it's like, love everyone, but you know that you don't want to be gay. You know that much. It's not like, you know, I mean, the F word for gay people was used, but like general, that was by my brother and my dad.
And by Rooster Teeth employees. Go on.
Yeah. But generally, he was like, love everyone. Like, we don't judge people. Blah, blah, blah. But you know that it's not what you should be. Yeah. You know that it's not natural and it's not right. So if I then traveled to the future when I was 12 and saw me making out with a girl, the tailspin, the absolute tailspin. I can't even is what I'm saying to you. I don't know what that would do to me mentally. Would it be better? I'm not sure, because you don't have the... One, you don't have the adult brain. You don't have the social context of things evolving so quickly around how we view gay people now just in our lifetime. You don't have any of that context. But I think the good thing is, I suppose, because she saw, one, the kiss, and that mm-hmm. she'd already met the girlfriend and was like, oh, this person's really cool and lovely. Then seeing her future self kiss this girl, and she seemed very happy. They seemed lovely together.
Mm-hmm.
And then meeting or seeking out that girl again to have a conversation was very sweet. That conversation was so sweet. It really brought tears to my eyes.
Did you like the, like, and it was both in the show and actually explicitly within that conversation mm-hmm. of, like, using discovering the power of movies. I'm pretty sure there were two Wizard of Oz references in that episode too. Like, they were really going for a whole opening up into a new world you never knew existed sort of thing going on. Did you enjoy that
Technicolor
parallel? Yes, basically.
It was fine. I don't think it was like the crux of anything or particularly elegant. Yeah, that's totally fine. I mean, just the parallel of, as you get older and you're exposed to more things and you discover your own passions and your own personality, naturally those often veer away from what, you know, the things that your parents loved or the community you come from admire or respect or whatever. And you figure out who you are. And so she was like, oh, well, maybe I'm interested in film. That's curious. I'd never thought that I would have been someone that was interested in film. Huh. Cool. Okay. That's interesting. And then obviously that also parallels with, I never thought I'd be someone who would be making out with girls. Sure. So it's, I don't know. It was quite lovely. It's also fitting for my own life as well. Like the more that I watched, because I was so controlled as a child, so, you know, I wasn't even allowed to watch Charmed, for goodness sake, because I had witchcraft in it. Like, I wasn't, and then, like, TV, you know, the more I watched, the more I was exposed to the different perspectives, the world I learnt about, just feeling confident in what I found that I was passionate about, and having my own opinions about things, about art. That makes you more confident in being like, I'm having independent thought. Oh my goodness, this is amazing. And it leaks into every part of your life and you become a much happier person. So I love that storyline. But it did make me go, I hope my future self doesn't like bamf into my lounge room and see me making out with Angela. Because I feel like I'd have to pay for her therapy as well and I can barely afford my own.
I was just thinking of my 12-year-old self bamped into my life. They'd just be like, oh yeah, he still watches TV and he still plays video games. Nothing's changed. Don't know what this podcasting business is, but this seems about right. Nothing surprising here. Just because we're talking about these future versions again, we're about to move on to Tiff here. I got to say, the casting of the future versions was really, really, really good. Mm-hmm. We didn't get to spend a lot of time with the older KJ, but this is the older KJ. You can totally
very clear.
See it. Even though they've got a different sort of dress sense and style,
mm-hmm.
there was no doubt in my mind that that was true. That was the same for Erin, and the same with Tiff. I thought that was all incredible casting, that stuff. Shall we move on to Tiff? Was there anything else you want to say about KJ? Oh, are you shipping KJ and Mac?
Of course I am. even in that first episode, got like the rough and tumble, devilish tomboy with an attitude And then you have your...
The real Damask from when she was 12.
Go Prissy on. Straight-laced hockey player is a huge hint. That, and they're like got a combative relationship. I'm like, oh, yes, this is going to happen. And I love it. And what we got between them was cute and complicated. And I loved every second of it. And I'm sad I won't get more.
Yeah, it was good. I shipped it too. I was looking forward to more of that. Finally, we have Tiff. Mm-hmm. Who was the last one to meet their future self. And I got to say, I was expecting the lady that was following them to actually be the future version of Tiff. When they started talking about the, whatever the, her last name was, Institute, I'm like, oh, that's set up to be the thing that like started the war. And she was like, and she was interested in like time travel and stuff. I was expecting that to all happen. Didn't, wasn't the case.
Yeah.
Quite similar to Erin's, as you said, this sort of disappointed version of herself where, she hasn't achieved what she thought she did. And in fact, if anything, was on the right path and then suddenly diverged off it.
Yeah, I think that was a really interesting part of it was obviously with Erin, she never got where she wanted to go because she had other priorities. Mm-hmm. Whereas Tiff achieved a lot of what she wanted. She was valedictorian. She got into MIT, which was her ultimate goal. And was really on that right path. And then to see her adult self make a different decision that diverged from that and just like wanting to understand but not understanding. And what I really enjoyed was her kind of so strong but clearly parroting. She sounded like a mum when she was lecturing her older self.
And she kept saying that's
Susan, there she is. Yeah. Which is very much like I was a little asshole when I was that age as well. Just like, you know, that's all you know is your parents' opinions.
Did you just call your mum an asshole?
No, I don't. I didn't mean that. But you just like parrot. I was an asshole because that opinion doesn't come from self. You're just parroting an opinion in such a strong black and white way that lacks all nuance.
Yeah.
Or all empathy towards, like, how different people live or what they think or whatever it might be. It's like, well, this is the right thing to do. So the fact that you're not doing it must be something wrong with you. What's wrong with you? Was very accurate, I think, for the age that Tiff was, as her younger self, and obviously being confronted by not knowing why future Tiff is doing what she's doing.
I'm trying to remember.
She seems like she's having a great time.
Totally. Yeah. I was very on board with Tiff's idea of like, you got to make sure you're still living your life alongside achieving everything you're achieving. And she's essentially taken a break, has goals in mind, but is taking it a bit easy for a while to, be with boys and play it dumb a little bit and all that sort of stuff. I had no problem with that.
Play like DJ for a little bit, go out at night.
Play Nintendo 64.
Yeah, just enjoy yourself.
I couldn't get over they were playing 64 and not marveling at the fact they had 3D graphics on video games now. Those girls were totally wasted on them.
Though, to be fair, when they went to our future.
2019.
Yeah, 2019. They go to the IT store and the screen has like the car racing.
That's true, on
it,
yeah.
And KJ, it says press start and she like presses it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
and I was like, as they walked in, I was like, yeah, that's kind of like... It was a bit like Back to the Future-y too, in terms of like, it is the future.
Even when they're walking down the street, there was like a billboard that was moving. And I was thinking like, yeah, that would blow my mind from when I was like 12 years old. That's
and,
like
just... and the phone and stuff, you're like, whoa.
Yeah, the phone and the computer stuff was good. I appreciate they got it pretty quickly. That stuff is usable for a reason. It's designed to be able to be understood and used. Mm-hmm. But just like, you can fucking just look up anything you want on the internet. Mm-hmm. With the Tiff stuff. Yeah, I'm trying to remember why she got expelled from MIT. Did they explicitly say what for? She just sort of like wasn't keeping up with the work by the sounds of it. She was disappointed by what MIT was, but that seemed like a smokescreen to try and like hand wave.
So her mum revealed the revelation that she was adopted. And obviously
she got distracted by
she
that.
She was struggling with that and obviously not keeping up to date. Probably, maybe drinking a bit too much, taking drugs.
Yes.
Who knows? You know, what you do when you like your whole foundation of what you thought was real isn't real anymore. You start to indulge a little bit and she lost side of her dream, or her dream changed. Yeah.
Well, how did you feel about that? That whole idea of like, she just comes out and says it in the coffee shop, it's like, you're adopted. Sort of been pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed until it came out. And that idea that she's like, this is my gift to you. It's like, find this stuff out now so you can start moving on. Find out who your mum really is, that you've been lied to, and sort of start moving on with your life.
If we were dealing with Tiff, maybe if she'd met Tiff in her 30s or 40s, that would not have happened. That's very much a 20-year-old. So these are my issues. I've dealt with them. I'm going to show you how to deal with them. It's so simplistic and so damaging to do that to a child. You're like, you're adopted. Now I'm going to play you Whitney Houston. It's just obviously a terrible thing to do, even to yourself. But they justified it in the story in terms of why she would have done that. They clearly are the way they communicate, they're kind of like sisters almost. And Mac has the great line of like, well, Tiffany's always been in love with herself when they're chatting in the kitchen, which is cute.
I did like that, the juxtaposition to like the errands could not see eye to eye. They had nothing in common virtually.
And Mac did say, just you wait. They're happy now. Just you wait. And she was right. You know, there's a lot of issues that still have to be dealt with there. But they had, a much more familiar relationship. And so I think adult Tiffany thought she could tell young Tiffany and then guide her through it, because she's already felt those emotions. But you can't, if you've already dealt with it on the inside, you can't then help someone else deal with it from the outside in the same way. That's just not how it works. But it makes sense to me that someone in their 20s would think that they could.
There was a period of time there where I thought the woman chasing them might have been a future version of Tiff. And maybe we were seeing three Tiffs, right?
Mm.
Young Tiff, teenage or 20s Tiff, and another version of Tiff in the future. And I was kind of reading into 20s Tiff, 1999 Tiff, as like, is she a bit of a sociopath? Like, is she the way she was like controlling the Dylan guy because she knew how to play him based on what he would respond to. I thought she was kind of doing that with herself, with like young Tiff. She was like keeping something from her and using this as like a way to advance her theories of like quantum physics or whatever it might be. And it was this point where it's like, are we watching a villain origin story here? No, I really did for a while.
Yeah. That's fair.
It didn't come to pass, but there was that lens I was watching it through, and it was kind of interesting to watch it that way. Go on.
Oh, I was like, I remember originally when they first meet an older Tiffany, and she's so very quickly, it's like, oh, okay, cool, I've traveled back from from the past.
That also made me super suspicious.
I was like, is she a villain? And even the music when she's first walking out of the warehouse and kind of like greeting them all, the music that's playing is very like, something's not right here. That made me go, oh no, she's evil.
Yes,
she's
that was not. My thinking too.
So I think like that we were led there for a short while.
Okay.
But then I just realized like, she's just a hyper intelligent person who probably isn't getting she isn't being stimulated in the way that perhaps she should be. And so she just kind of, controls this guy. That's just something fun to do, work her brain a little bit that way. She's just, hyper intellectual person.
Which, is a massive advantage if you're a sociopath. Because it was also, well, it is. And she was like, she says like, he's not my boyfriend. He's just a bit of fun. It's just like, and it's like she's deliberately leading this guy on. And that's not to say that all your relationships in your 20s have to be
serious. Well, I think he's leading her on as well. Like, he's an absolute dropkick using her for like rides and stuff. I think it's mutually beneficial.
it came around. But there were all these little things, like all those things I was like, I think she's a bad person.
I think she's just a little lost.
The overall, as a group of four, and they sort of, they're oftentimes the four of them together, they're often sort of mixing up and repairing them in different ways. Though I feel like Tiff didn't get to form a strong relationship with the other three as the other three sort of did with each other. Mm-hmm. Did you I mean, I think I know the answer, but you enjoyed this female friendship story, this group of young girls and their...
Yeah, I definitely did. I just want to speak to the fact that Tiff isn't really bonding with the other three as much.
Another reason I thought the future surgeon was a villain, but go on.
And yet she bonds with the adults. She bonds with Larry. She bonds with older Tiff. I think that's just kind of, she's one of those kids who's always friends with the teacher and doesn't necessarily have friends. Like, that's just her vibe. But yeah, no, I loved the aspect of the female friendship, the things that they were learning from one another. I really enjoyed it. I'm getting more and more heartbroken the more we talk about it, that this is it.
Well, I think this sums up the show, though, as we've spent the best part of 30 to 40 minutes talking about the girls and their interpersonal storylines and intra. We've talked for no time about the mechanics of the show, about dinosaurs, the other spoiler thing that was in Shari's email that I didn't want to mention. Like, those things ultimately just weren't the important thing.
No. I want to see them traveling through time, being friends, having a bit of drama, being friends, having a bit of drama, becoming cool, awesome women.
Which I guess is the bit, though, that, like, frustrates me. And again, it's probably part of the comic, and the comic can do this easier, but there is a lot of time that's spent on giant robots and robots fighting each other and, like, stuff like that that isn't what makes this show good. And you kind of wish they just found a way to... I did think when I was watching the giant robot fight going, this is crap. I wish there were spaceships or something instead. I wish it was just simpler and didn't have to be so dorky. I wish there was a way this could have been, made smaller. I know spaceships versus giant robots doesn't seem that much different, but, like, something simpler so that it didn't have to take up so much time or be so stick out so much. Because the core was so strong.
Yeah. And even when we get to the personal and the emotional in terms of, you know, the time travel-y stuff and, like, the rebels or whatever, like, that moment when 1999 Larry comes to the apartment and he's like, you've got to come see someone. And Erin's like, fine, I'll go hang out with you. And she's like, I saw you die, by the way. And he's just like, what? What are you talking? Like, he's a part of, like, the rebel force and that larger storyline, but him having, like, a personal emotional reaction to that was really effective. Like,
yeah.
More of that stuff. More of, like, yes, you can have, like, rebels fighting this big bad. Just keep it in the personal. Keep it in the real, because that's where the show shines.
Any last words?
Final thoughts.
That's why you always leave a note.
Do you have any side notes to mask?
I don't have any side thoughts. Side notes, I meant. I don't have any side thoughts. Go on.
Only mainstream thoughts. My side note was Mac has got some serious John Connor vibes going, but we already got there. Mm-hmm. Highlights and lowlights. What was the low light of Paper Girls Season 1 for you, Damask?
Yeah, I think it's got to be the finale episode. Mm. I think the moments of the dinosaur, the Jason Manzoukas-ness of it all, the them running away into the basement and being like, we're safe for now. I'm like, how do these future beings have no technology that can scan for life forms? We have that now with like infrared scanning. Like, what's going on here?
They were able to, like, hide behind.
Just like
weird.
I was like, it seemed convoluted and a bit stupid, and I just didn't need it. Also, if you have, like, beams that can suck up people, are we using dinosaurs just to eat things? Is that what we're doing? Like, just things like that. I think that final episode, those moments on the farm bothered me. I was somewhat interested when we were in, like, the biggest spaceship or whatever. I like the fact they've been sent in two different timelines.
Sure.
It's cool. I really want to explore that. So that bit worked for me. It was mostly just the farm stuff. I'm like, no, I don't like this.
Similarly.
Sorry,
go on. Yes.
The hand touching and KJ freaking out. I was like, I love this. Sorry. Yep, go on.
Similarly, Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, who are the pairings too at the end when they were going off?
It's KJ and Mac.
Oh, it's KJ and Mac.
And Tiff and Aaron. So I'm just like so annoyed. I'm gonna have to log on to fanfiction.net tonight. Tell you what.
The fanfiction was already written. It's in, you can buy it. It's in comic book form.
But I've got to get it delivered. I need it now.
Surely you can get that online somewhere. You can get a digital version. Surely.
That's a good point. Yeah, okay.
And Vertigo. I won't say that. It could be Dark Horse. Who knows? If I looked it up, I'd find out. I'm going to, similarly, my low light was robots fighting robots. And by that, I mean episode 5, A New Period, which gets there towards the end, particularly with the KJ stuff. And also, I'll tell you what, actually. Can I tell you a little moment that's got me in a weird way? Maybe it's because I have a dog now. When KJ... Like, she'd been talking about this puppy that we never saw, right? But she was talking about the puppy. And then this old fucking dog walks and was like, oh, my God, that's the puppy. And it recognizes her.
Yeah, that was like, emotional.
That was like, that's so sweet. Just a little moment.
It's but it so
was
sweet, like, but so, I mean, I'm glad the dog had KJ, but I'm sad that KJ didn't have the dog.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, the dog had grown up with a KJ, but she had missed its life. And that made me really sad. Oh, there's another moment, actually, that's a low light. And it's in the same, that final episode. When the rebels are on like the farm or whatever, and the grandma's like, there's a cat in the kitchen or whatever. They figure out it's some kind of like surveillance thing.
Yes.
And
yes.
The girls ask, what do we do now? This woman lifts up the bin, points a gun and says like, run away.
At the camera.
And shoots it. I'm like, don't tell them you're running. It's so stupid. Anyway, that really got me. It made me laugh.
I agree. Very similarly, that whole bit with the robots, then when the robot, even though the Eren death was kind of tragic, them just sort of sitting there behind the little barrier and the thing watching it happen was really clunky and gross. Then when the soldiers show up and Tiff's going to run
it's
out there
bad.
To get the bag, it's like, why is this happening? Why
that
is this happening?
That stuff is just like bad world building. If I'm asking why they're so technologically advanced.
Yes.
But that, like, this doesn't work, that doesn't work, that doesn't work. Like, that's just bad world building. Yeah.
Agreed. Highlight.
It's got it. Obviously, overall Max storyline.
Mm-hmm.
Every scene with the brother.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah, no, every scene with the brother. I think the scene when they're out, like, doing the firework thing and he's sitting on the couch or whatever.
Yes.
And he's, you know... just apologizing for explaining to her that they grew up really rough, shouldn't have experienced what they experienced, but also that he contributed to that was very beautiful to me, and I loved it.
I agree. Mac in general, but the Mac and Dylan stuff particularly was – I was enjoying the show fine, I guess, but I wasn't loving it. And then when I was talking about how this show exists between inferior and masterful somehow – that is the bit that's like masterfully done.
Mm-hmm.
It's so, so strong. It almost seems weird. It's in here with the fucking spider robot. Like, how are those two things in the same show? Mm. And the topper with on the back of the motorbike with KJ was just I couldn't believe how great that was. Anyway.
And I just like, in terms of the writing, like the scene where Dylan is explaining to her that, like, you know, you can't use those words anymore or whatever. Mm. Like, that could be like so kind of, obviously I agree with the sentiment, but they can come across so preachy, but they balance it really well with like, oh, you can't really use those words anymore. And she's like, well, what can I use? And he gives her some like beautiful examples or options. And then, and they use them and it's just wonderful. And I was like, that's how you do it. Yeah. Swearing and saying terrible things is fun. Just don't do it in like a bigoted way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Totally. Predictions, hopes, and concerns for a show that we never got, for a comic book series that we may read.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you see this going? Where would you have liked to have seen this gone? Specific characters, overall story stuff.
Well, obviously, Mac and KJ are off together. They'll get to know each other more. Crushes will begin, and I would love to have seen that. I was very concerned when I saw that Tiff and Aaron, the women of color, were taken back to, what was it, the 50s?
1950s, it looked like, yeah. It was like they were transported in Greece, yeah.
I was very concerned about that situation. Mm. I don't know how. I guess how would they come back together? I don't know. Eventually they would come back together, but I have so little.
We didn't know where. Did Mac and KJ end up in a time machine?
Yeah.
I think they did too. They went first. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we don't know where they went. So my guess is they probably would have ended up in the future. Probably.
I think they went to go find like Tiff or whatever when she, because she invented like.
Right. So that's how they would have figured it out. I think you're right.
Yeah, they would have bounced back and got.
They would have, through that, somehow ended up getting back to the other two.
Being reunited and then big battle or whatever. Yeah. But I know so little about how the bad guys function that I don't know how one would fight them. So I don't know. But all I know is that KJ and Mac fall in love, hold hands a whole bunch. It's super cute. We love it. We lose our minds. I watch fan videos all the time about it and cry. I get obsessed with the show. And then it ends and I'm very sad, but I'm so happy for being able to watch the whole story on TV. That would have been my prediction.
Yeah, I have a lot of predictions. I could make guesses at what they're going to do with the time travel stuff, but it's interesting me, like, with the overall, the old watch and all sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Stuff. But it actually interests me so little, I don't really care where that was going based on how this show went. My question for you is, I'm very much similar shipping KJ and Mac. However, there's like two happy endings for Mac, and I don't think she can have both. It's like, do you want her to end up with KJ, but probably end up dying by the age of 16? Or does she go back and live with Dylan and get her brain cancer solved?
Well, Jason Manzoukas says, cancer, I remember when that existed.
Sure.
So they can go in the future and have it removed. So they can do that. Do I think the show would do that? No. They'd have to break your heart somehow.
Yeah.
So KJ and Mac would have to do like the sacrifice and say goodbye forever. I'm getting emotional.
Mac would end up sacrificing herself because unless KJ did.
No, KJ would be like, she would take her back to the past and leave her there and be like, this is the life that you deserve. And she would leave her and it'd be so sad. Oh my gosh, I can't even think about it.
See, I wonder whether Mac would die, would end up like, yes, the brain cancer's removed or whatever, but, or has the option to, but ends up not doing it and sacrificing herself. Because ultimately, she wants to, like, that happened and we see. It's a weird thing to think about, but the influence that her death had on Dylan and on her stepmom, I tell you what, that's a storyline I want to see more of. We're going to get to see the stepmom in the past, like in the 50s or something like that.
There's definitely going to be more of that.
Yeah,
definitely going to be more of that.
There is something there that was going to get explored that we didn't get a chance to, and it's a real shame because that was set up really well. A nice little dangling thread. Damn, we are going to have to read these comic books.
Yeah, we are.
Okay.
Book club.
Let's do it. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Hunting Seasons. You can find more of what we do via our website, huntingseasonspodcast.com. Our logo comes from Sean Kirkpatrick, a.k.a. at Shawnee Boy Draws. Our theme song from Lucas Harlow Birthday Loyalty Club. Find links to their work in our show notes. You can also find myself, Broderick Gordes, on Twitter at bgordes. That's B-G-O-R-D-E-S, Damask.
Can't find me anywhere, losers.
Can contact us at contact@huntingseasonspodcast.com, which I highly encourage people do. Shari did so. And in fact, Paper Girls was something that I was aware of. I knew Damask had watched it or found out later that she watched it. I wasn't going to go out of my way to do it, but because of Shari's email, 8 episodes length as well wasn't too bad. Yeah. And I had an interest in Brightcane Vaughan. We end up doing it. So thank you, Shari, for suggesting that we watch it. Sorry to everybody else who suggested shows that we haven't done yet. Sorry we haven't watched any more of Black Sails. Anyway, next episode, we'll be back to discuss The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, Season 1. Cannot wait to talk about that. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, thank you again for listening. We will see you next time. Bye for now.
Bye.
Good night, everybody.
Absolutely.